Women the Engineer would like to acknowledge the traditional custodians and owners of the land on which this podcast is recorded, the Yagara and Turrbal people of Meanjin. We pay respect to their elders past and present. Always was, always will be, Aboriginal land.
Happy Friday, everyone, and welcome to the Women the Engineer podcast, a podcast to empower female engineers to break the bias one story at a time. If you are new here, I'm your host, Lily Freestone, a graduate process engineer passionate about supporting fellow women in engineering to succeed and thrive. Today, I'm joined with an engineer who found herself in the construction industry after having the privilege of never being told she couldn't. Following her studies of civil engineering and finance in Sydney, she pursued a graduate role at a tier one construction company with the opportunity to work in sectors and projects across the country. Georgia, hello, and welcome to the podcast. Thank you for joining me today.
Hey, thank you so much for having me.
No, thank you so much. I'm really excited to be talking with you today. I think construction is an area that is thought of or known. I actually Googled it, and it is, according to the Queensland Government Department of Housing, Local Government, Planning, Public Works, in Queensland, the percentage of women in construction is only 15%.
Yes, that doesn't surprise me.
Yeah, and I think it's an area where women are quite cautious of going into because of the way it's presented as being maybe unwelcome, and that's how I think I've perceived it.
Yeah,
so I'm really excited to hear what you've been through and your story, and hopefully it really resonates with some other women who want to go into construction or are in construction.
So. Yeah, no, I appreciate that. I think construction is really interesting because it's sort of, you're slipping through the cracks between being a woman in trades and then a woman in engineering. So it's really nice to sort of be included in your mix. So I really appreciate it.
No, definitely. So I always start the episode with asking the exact same question, which is how your engineering journey started. So Georgia, can you tell us of your first experience with engineering and how you got into construction?
Yeah, so I guess I started off by doing engineering in a sort of boring capacity. Through school, it was the standard sort of engineering, good at math, was pretty good at science, and did a psychometric test that sort of suggested that engineering would be something I'd be good at. It was quite daunting, I think, but I went to an all-girls school, so STEM was quite heavily pushed there, which I was really grateful for, but signed up for engineering and I guess started in my first week, and probably I've got, after having only sisters and then going into my first week of engineering, I sort of was quite shocked to be the only girl, which was I shouldn't say the only girl, but in the minority, I think that sort of was my privilege in the sense that I had all sisters and was full of supporters from my family to get into engineering, and then full of supporters from school to be going into engineering. It wasn't uncommon for women to be good at science in an all-girls school. And then so to be thrust into a world where you weren't told that you weren't going to be, I guess it was almost like on my first day, people were making inferences of me that, you know, I wouldn't be successful, or I wouldn't know what I was talking about. And I had never had that before, which isn't that amazing that I lasted until, 19 or whatever that was. But it was quite confronting, to be honest. Engineering was definitely a bit of a bumpy start. But since then, I had really always enjoyed construction. I had, worked sort of like renovating on my parents' houses, and ended up doing a little bit of work in consultancy and design in the civil and structure space. And it sort of was probably not what I thought I was going to get into in engineering. So when I got an opportunity to work in construction, I was really grateful, and went from there. So I think I'd always expected that I would go into construction from an engineering path.
Yeah, that's great. And it's interesting, I talk to so many people, and I do find majority of women that actually do end up going into engineering have actually come from all girls schools. And I went to a co-ed school, and I never once had engineering mentioned to me until one person said it. And Yeah, and then I kind of got into engineering and I was there and I was like, I've no idea what's going on. And I wonder how different it would be if I went to an all-girls school and kind of had that pushed to me at an earlier age. Would I have felt more confident going into a discipline I went into process? Would I have gone into something I wasn't comfortable with, like electrical? Yeah, it's so
And I also think
interesting.
it's so sad in a way that like we all think that we've ended up in engineering by chance. Like how has that happened that it's something that's I guess that's why you're here. It's and it's amazing because really there's no one telling you that it's normal to be an engineer as a woman. It's sort of something that one person mentions off the cuff, or a psychometric test had a list that they said that I'd be good at, and one of those things was you can problem solve, you can be an engineer. Like I don't think that that would have been presented to me had I not had we not had these sort of just off the cuff chances that we could go and pursue that, and then it just sticks in your brain and you end up doing it. I guess that's why you're here.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's why all the programs that are coming through now to introduce STEM and those engineering outreach programs in high school, I think are really great, and I love to see them.
Yeah, and I think that the it's so important again to be facilitating that, not just from what degree are you going to choose, but you need women to be in co-ed schools and knowing that they can choose science or choose tech or whatever your school presents, so that there's pathways that once you get to engineering that that it's still an option for you. Because I think some women it's we cut our pool really small because we have narrowed everyone all these women's choices so young. So making sure that everyone's got open choice, I think, is really important.
I so agree with that. And I'm really curious, when you went into engineering, what did any other girls from your school also go into engineering?
Yeah, so my so I started at one university, and there was a collection of us who went into engineering. I think there was about five from my school, which was excellent at that uni. However, I think I was the only one who finished. I think that sort of says something for maybe the pace of the degree and even the environment that you get yourself in, and then realize, oh gosh. Something I thought was quite interesting. So my first university had almost, I think it was almost up to about 40% women. It was really quite high. And then my second university, and that was obviously first year. And then my second university, when I transferred, had about 25% women. But something that was really interesting, I thought, when they started looking at demographics, and maybe this is something that I don't have a particular stat to back this up, but talking around tutorials, it's an amazing thing that the Australia has tertiary education as an export. But talking to a lot of the women were from overseas, and they were really keen, obviously, to go home. Once they had gained their education from Australia, they wanted to go home. So it's been really interesting because just because you had 25% in your cohort at uni, it didn't mean that that translated to 25% in industry, and that's before you'd even distilled into construction. So I think that again was quite shocking. It's like we've said, there's been so many factors in which I guess it's just gotten narrower and narrower, and you see less and less women the further you get along. And I guess obviously no one needs to say anything about once people get to, I guess, child bearing age, that it even narrows again because there's other barriers that come into play. So yeah, it's something that I've seen evolve, I guess, from uni.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it's such a big thing. And I want to know, you're still here, you're killing it. How did you first tackle going from being in a room of all women to being in a room of all guys? How did you, I guess, keep yourself sane and support yourself to keep going through?
Yeah, I think this is a really important question and something that I think I'm still grappling with, and was probably something that I was really lucky enough over the weekend to catch up with a couple of my colleagues or past colleagues who work in construction with me, or women in engineering, in sort of with different varying backgrounds. And I actually sort of brought this question to them because I think our personalities have lend themselves to construction in a different way, and that male environment in a different way. And something that we really, and I think this is true for all engineering, but it's really, you're really hyper aware of it in construction, because I guess the stereotypes that run with it. But there really is a lot of sink or swim, you know. You sort of have to, in the sense of, you have to conform or you're dead. And I think that that's something that I think a lot of women would resonate with. And I think in this group of women that I was sort of sitting with, we were sort of varying on that spectrum of how much do you fit in versus how much do you stick to your own guns and make sure that you're being heard for, you know, your belief system, and not taking a certain level of disrespect, or even watching other people be disrespected, and, you know, whether you choose to do that. And I think it's a really hard question. I think one that is really unique to women in male dominated fields, because you're constantly having to shelter the mental burden of, well, do I speak out about this and, you know, be that person that did that, or do I conform in a masculine way, I guess, in some ways, and thrive, like, you know, as you say. And I think something that's been something I've really had to deal with is that, for better or for worse, my style at work comes across more masculine. That's not necessarily a conformance. That's, you know, just something that I, that's just my style, in a professional sense. And there's some women that are around me that I watch who are as capable, and, their style is probably not respected as much. And I think that's quite hard. It's it's an interesting question, because as much as you might be able to thrive in some capacity, other people who you would deem to be as capable might not be thriving in the same way, because they've had to make a choice and they've made a different choice. And it's something I think I through every situation and every conversation, even, you ask yourself whether this is the one that's gonna be the one that you speak out about, or whether this is the one that, and it's so, and often it's really trivial. And I think I've had friends who it's really been the trivial thing sort of banked up over time, and then it's been the straw that broke the camel's back. So I don't know if that fully answers the question, but I guess it's sort of a broad topic. It's a really interesting one, and something I think I feel really passionate about talking to my fellow female engineers about, because I think you really have to decide on how you choose to tackle that.
Yeah, and I really like how you kind of said, like, that mental burden. I think that that's a really big thing when you are the minority, because, I mean, like, you just, you, it's such a tough spot, because you almost have to come to work as a different person to
Agreed.
Do your job, and that's exhausting. It's so tiring. Yeah. And then on top of that, your job requires a lot of brain energy, and I find it frustrating and baffled, because I am a woman, and I don't think how anybody dresses or looks should determine how smart they are. And it's always something that I've really struggled to, I don't want to accept it, but I almost have to, because, you know, it's, you just, you, I, you're right. Like, it's sink or swim, and it sucks. And it's so hard. Yeah. And I think to anyone listening,
and it's a case of self-preservation. Yeah. Like, at what points, you know, I've got some of my friends who are, women, and they're also POCs, and that adds an additional layer, and it makes me feel additionally responsible for their success in the industry, because, you know, I think that there's automatically a barrier that they have that I don't, that I feel like I need to bolster them up again. But then you look around sometimes, you're like, well, who's who's bolstering me? Like,
Yeah.
I think, and almost in summary, I guess, like, how do you cope? You make sure you're speaking, you personalize your experience with other women, I think is probably something that's been so deeply supportive in construction and in engineering at large. I think without the other women there, I can only imagine it would be so difficult.
Yeah, definitely. You always cling to that other woman that you see, even if she's on the other side of the room. It's a
Yeah.
magnet. Yeah.
It is, yeah. And I think you notice it when you're in meetings together, and the women are always platforming each other, which has been amazing. I guess something, that we're not strangers to as part of, like, sort of discussions about feminism is that sometimes there's talk about how there might only be one seat at the table for you, and therefore you're in competition with your fellow women to, I guess, run for that spot. And I think something that has really been overwhelming in construction and my career to date is that the women, you're not competing against these women. We're very much all in the trenches together. And someone will be having a bad day, and you pick that person up. And you're all making sure that you're, again, having discussions about pay and about how would you tackle this situation. Again, it's really leveling that mental load, as you'd say.
Yeah, and would you say that that's been like your biggest challenge, struggling with picking your battles and balancing those pros and cons of standing up for yourself and just trying to get through your work?
Yeah, and yes, I think that definitely, I think that it's because it's a constant struggle, and it's probably one of a bit of nuance that isn't, we talk about the big issues when we talk about women in engineering, and that is has been transformative to all engineering disciplines and industries. We look at things like parental leave, we look at things like allowing part-time work, flexibility, all these things have really provided women with the ability to be able to stay in their roles, and I guess provide us with sort of figures to look up to. But I think something there's all these parts of these male-dominated industries that require so much nuance that I don't think we've dismantled yet. I think that there's a level of enduring that you have to. It's every conversation, it's every day. I think it's like you said, you have a work persona, you have a personal persona. Do you lose all your, like, I was watching a TikTok the other day, and it was talking about, like, the sense of having to lose your femininity when you're in these situations, because you want to be seen as respectful, and that's, what has been deemed to be successful thus far. And therefore, if you are going in and you're showing those parts of you, that can be a detraction. But also, there's a level of commodification of women, which I think is it's really hard to talk about, I think, and it's really hard to talk about without being like casting aspersions to your fellow colleagues, because I think that a lot of the time their intentions are really innocent. But I think to add to that mental load we were talking about previously, there's a bit of an emotional load. You can never you It's an emotional burden that you can never show the full extent of yourself. It's not just that you don't want to, there's a sense of you can't, because there's things, I was talking to one of my female colleagues recently, and she was saying that, I choose not to go to any work social events at the pub off on a Friday, because I'm really scared that I'll, I see this person as a colleague, and they might, and if they say something while they're a couple of drinks in, that I deem as inappropriate, or they flirt with someone or something, I don't want to know them without a filter. Like, I'm barely struggling as it is. And then I think there's, as a woman in construction, I think that minority piece is that you almost feel like there's a sense of owing to a lot of your colleagues. I've had people directly ask me whether I'm single or not, or it's really interesting walking around site, because if you've got say on a 300 person site, there's maybe 3 to 10 women. Lots of that, not many, though a lot of them will be engineers or they'll be traffic control typically. There's even, we've just spoken about the fact that in trades, there's really not that many women. And it's funny because every, in quotations, eligible bachelor knows your name. You've got these 290 men who you've never spoken to before, and you walk past them and you go, "Hi, Georgia. Hi, Georgia." And you're like, "I've never spoken to you in my life." Like, and they all know, somehow they all seem to know all the women's relationship statuses. And it's like, if I'm single, it doesn't mean that I'm dating you. Like, do
No,
you know what I mean?
yeah,
And so
wow.
there's a level of you don't want to share parts of your personal life because that could rear other ugly heads, I guess. So I think, yeah, it is a constant battle of trust with your colleagues. And that's, I guess, why I think there's so many strong female bonds, because there is a lot of trust there. And I think you've almost, for better and for worse, isolated yourself from some of the other colleagues, which is a bit sad.
Wow. And it's like you were saying, when you don't want to, you don't almost like you don't want to give too much away of your personality, because it could potentially give them something to use against you.
And to
And
latch onto as well.
yes, yeah, and that's scary. And yeah, I don't think people talk about that enough. I think you're right. There are a lot of conversations. We had that report released about pay gap. Cool. Bringing in part-time work, cool. But what about how I feel in a meeting because what I
Yes.
said was kind of brushed off? What about
Yes.
when I only feel like what I did on the weekend matters when I talk to someone that's a female and thinks Pilates is also cool?
Like, I think it's so funny you say that, because I think the idea that your hobbies are not, it sounds so trivial, but the fact that your hobbies are not considered, it's like, oh, what should we all do as a work bonding activity? Oh, let's like go to the driving range. And you're like, oh my gosh, like, and to, I guess, circle back to, probably without it being, us tumbling into a bit of negativity, I think something that's been so amazing that about construction in particular, and every light that I've seen in construction, has been other people, particularly cis white men, the people that we expect to be in construction, showing parts of their personality. And that sounds so bizarre, but it really does foster trust. It was so, I remember in my first couple of weeks as an engineer in construction, I was an intern. I was by far the youngest there. And one of my colleagues was telling me that he was planning to go to yoga that night. And I just remember feeling so at home with him saying that. Like, I don't know what it was, but it was like, I think we come to construction and you expect that there's going to be, that every person's going to be the same. And so you go in guarded and everything. And I think that at times, like, you don't, there are times that you definitely need to, which we've spoken about, but there's also a lot of times that when you open up, you actually see beautiful people on the other side. And that has been very a nice point to check myself, I think, as well.
That's nice. It makes you feel thought of. They actively wanted to bring that up with you, and that's a really nice feeling. And this is such a big thing, and it's so daunting. And I want to know what you think, from your experience, or what you want done, to help improve this. Like, what do you think you, me, and everyone listening can do to start to improve this experience for women engineering? Because it is heavily in construction, but I think it's everywhere. I feel it at work
I agree.
sometimes too.
Yeah, I think just to step back a bit, in my 6 months in consultancy, there was definitely, in some ways, more sex in a different way, but some in some ways more traditionalist sort of engineering sexism that I probably saw there that I did in construction. So it definitely is something that's not just like on a work site. It's definitely something that is in offices. I think that the things that we can all do, I think that our campaigns holistically towards women in engineering, women in construction to date have really been targeted at women, empowering women, creating spaces that they can be included. But I think that we haven't fully tackled the, how do I put this? The making men, I guess, think and be a little uncomfortable about how they process things. In certain aspects of my company, they have been trying to push that you're not allowed to use the term guys anymore because that would be not inclusive. But to me, that feels like low-hanging fruit, right? Like you're
I agree. Yep.
I would way prefer for men to be considering, their turn of phrase and how they how they approach women in the workplace, how they choose to step in. I had a manager when I was an intern. I was getting really, I was it's that same thing. Like when I went into uni, I was going into construction, and I was so used to the percentages of women at university and being listened to and blah blah blah. And there was times in construction where I was just like, for being a woman and for being a junior, people weren't listening to me, and I was getting so frustrated. And he said, like, what can I do? And I was like, all I need you to do is in a time that someone's not listening to me, I need you to just give me the floor, as in stop the person and say, I think Georgia knows the answer if you give her the time to say, and let me explain that answer. And I think that was so powerful. I remember him doing it, and it was really powerful at the time. And I think that's something that I guess managers can do. I think that's a really active thing. Talking to, and that's not just women, that's talking to your subordinates about how they would feel empowered. I think that there's a level of personability from a business perspective that sometimes we're not providing managers the skills to be able to know how to manage minorities in different environments. And I don't think that is just women. I think it's lots of things. And then I think from a business perspective, again, something that my female colleagues and I talk a lot about is goal development meetings and how they're framed and structured. I think that's a really active way that companies themselves can fix things like pay gaps and that sort of thing. Because, for instance, my company, we have a performance review at one point in the year, and we have a pay review at another point in the year. And that essentially results in it's great because you rate yourself and your manager rates you, and then you sort of come to a sort of a conclusion in the middle. I think that the thing that becomes difficult is if with pay rises or promotions, you often have to ask for them. And I know that that's something that's not for a minority who's, suffering imposter syndrome and all of the other things that come along with being a minority, glass ceilings, glass cliffs, whatever we're talking about. It's really difficult for that person to even get to the point to get up the courage to then go and
Yeah, so daunting, so daunting.
exactly. So to be able to have the manager say, where do you think you will be? What is the figure that you think that you would be receiving? I think just create again, it's creating that platform for to open the conversation instead of it having to be instigated by the person lower. I think again, you never want in creating power for a minority in any situation, whether it's at work or in personal life, they should never be the person having to instigate their power, getting their power back. So I think that's probably something, as we rise into our careers, but also, from businesses' perspectives, I think that's something that they can really restructure to suit women and minorities, I guess, flaws and also their strengths and, making sure that they have the floor to ask for what they want.
Yeah, definitely. I really like how you talk about like the people part of management, because I think a big part of that is that empathy. And I think for your team that are not you, they have had very different experiences to you, having that empathy to approach that conversation can just make such a big difference. And yeah, it's something I'd really like to see improve moving forward. And seeing more men champion women, I think, is really important as well, because we can't do it without them. We can form our girl groups, you know, if that's what you want to call it, and we can share with each other. But at the end of the day, if a man who's 90% of the time automatically going to have the floor, if they don't share that with us, how it's really hard, because you feel like you have to fight for it, but you want to be on the same level. And we're running out of time, but oh my gosh, I feel like there's so much to say.
There really is.
Yeah, there's so much to say. But yeah, we're coming towards the end of the episode. Zoom is telling me that I have a very short countdown before it kicks me out. And so, Georgia, I want to say thank you so much for coming on this podcast and sharing your experience and your thoughts. I feel so fired up talking to you. And I hope anyone listening, everyone listening, has heard this. And if you've related with these challenges that Georgia's gone through, that you're feeling maybe less alone in that and empowered to fight on. And I wanted to raise, I did a little Google, there's the National Association of Women in Construction, which would probably be a great group for anyone in construction to reach out to as well. And yeah, I want to keep this conversation going. So I will be putting something in the Facebook group on Friday when this drops. And I want to know what you guys think. If you're not a part of our Facebook group, please join. I want to know what you think. I want to have you in the group and connect with other women. And again, Georgia, thank you so much. That was a bit of a fast ramble. but this podcast wouldn't be possible without people like you coming on, sharing your passion and being so open about the challenges you've been through. And I think your story will hit many people and really inspire them, and I think you're doing great, even if sometimes you might feel like you have a hard day. Just showing up and doing you is amazing.
Thank you, I really appreciate it, Lily. And I again thank you. It's so special to be a woman in construction, a woman in engineering. We really have the capacity to create change, and I think acknowledging that it's hard, but acknowledging sort of the fun and the, you know, the platform that we have. So grateful to the women who have come before me, and also hoping that we're making a better place for the women after.
Yes, definitely. I think you're definitely doing that just by sharing your story, for sure.
All right, thank you so much.
You're all right. Thanks for listening, everyone. I will see you all in a few weeks in the next episode.